Welcome to KZMU Radio. Music, where you live. Today we'll be interviewing Logan Lynn.
Lucy, you have a terrible voice for radio. Trent, can we fire her?
How dare you, Sam? And put down that dog. It doesn't like you. Logan, thank you for inviting the three of us to your apartment. Why don't you tell us about it?
Tell you about the new apartment. I just moved here a couple weeks ago after I intentionally downsized my life and moved closer in. Like when I got clean and sober, well, not totally sober, but when I quit doing drugs and drinking, I moved out there to sort of the farthest point of the city to get away from just the nightlife and people being like, hey, the bars are closed, let's go to Logan's or whatever. So that worked out really well for a couple of years, and then it stopped being so convenient, so I moved here. And it's small. It looks like my place, though, so that's good.
And you do have a little dog here.
I do.
Dutch, is that the right name?
Yep.
Dutch is a little furball.
Yep.
You can barely see Dutch's face.
He's a Pomeranian, a teacup, but he's actually a little bit larger than he's supposed to be. He's a teacup with a weight problem.
Lucy has a weight problem, too.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in music and how you got to where you are now.
I mean, I was raised in the church and sort of, you know, not really allowed to listen to a lot of music. So once I started discovering pop music and alternative music in particular, that was sort of important and was monumental for the change. Is that me?
Sorry.
Okay. It was sort of monumental in my thinking about, you know, what music is and whether or not, I don't know, it had never really been a part of my life. So once I started discovering it, and that having that feeling like it could be taken away by my parents or something, it sort of like implanted this like need to have it in my life in different ways. So, you know, early on I was, you know, getting CDs and hiding records from my parents and doing things like that.
Like what kind of records would you hide?
Well, I wasn't allowed to listen to anything secular, so anything that wasn't Amy Grant or Michael W. Smith or Stryper.
Amy Grant was actually the first concert I ever went
really,
to.
Really? She's awesome. I actually, you know, it's embarrassing, but if I were to name my influences, she's probably on the list, just because it's, you know, she sort of was my first exposure to lyric writing from a personal point of view, even though her point of view is obviously, you know, much different than mine. To be exposed to that, I think that was cool from an early age. And then I started, you know, doing the Nirvana thing, and I wore flannel and started doing drugs and did all of that. And then I found the rave scene when I was maybe like 13 or 14, which back then it was the 90s, and it was cool. And it was like a sort of an alternate universe that I became immersed in, and, you know, got really into techno and house music that way, and started down sort of an electronic path as a DJ first. And then I moved out here and kind of continued that for a little while. And in like 96 or 97, I went through kind of a bad breakup. It was not really that bad in retrospect, but at the time I really felt like, you know, heartbroken, and it was horrible. I was 16 or 17. And I started writing, you know, a lot of pretty introspective stuff, just like sort of pity party styles. And eventually sort of busted out my keyboards and started playing around with folk music, but in this like techno kind of way. And back then there was nobody really doing that, and it was sort of a new thing that when I played it for people, like, they were either like, wow, that's crazy, or wow, that's crazy and we like it, you know. It was like there was no like reference point, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky. I met a producer who had worked pretty closely with Elliot Smith and some other people in town, and got he saw one of the shows that I performed, which was like rare, but I did this one show and it was in town, and it was kind of a disaster, and everybody just like scratched their head and looked at me and was sort of like wondering what the hell I was doing, but he wasn't. He kind of got it and decided to, even though it was really rough, and I was singing about like kind of horrendous things that were, you know, not pop and not really mainstream at all, but he was able to kind of offer studio space and bring me in with his musical knowledge and take my demo, which was called This Is Folk Techno. And he was able to turn that into an album with me, which was Glee, which came out a couple of years later in 2000. And when, you know, when it came out, nobody knew what I was doing still. It wasn't until really 2003 when the Postal Service did their thing that people like were able to like understand what I was trying to do even. So that's been, it's been cool ever since then. I mean, it's great. I'm happy to be compared to them. I don't really think we're that similar. But it's cool that people have a reference point now. And now there's like tons of people doing electronic and different things that are, you know, friends with my music, same genre. There is a genre now for it. So it's a much more welcoming environment, I think, these days.
Logan, what is the difference between your older material and your new stuff?
Well, the main difference is that I was making it all myself on my bed or like in this basement studio with very little money and no equipment and all that. And, you know, for this record, I had the Dandy Warhols studio and their engineers and stuff like that at my disposal. So just on the basic level of, you know, financially not having the means to make a polished record, that was honestly why that was the way it was before. You know, I'd like to say it's because I was trying to fight the man and didn't want to subscribe to music as it is widely known, but that's not really the case. It's just that I had no money and I was kind of a junkie and just like couldn't get it together to like make a proper record. When I met Courtney, he made that possible. So I was able to, you know, A, stop being a junkie, and B, you know, I still had no money, but I all of a sudden had this like multi-million dollar studio that we could sort of run free in. And that's, you know, the 2 years I spent from 2007 to when we finished the new one was all spent learning and sort of getting better and taking people's advice that had been there before me, like for years and years before me. And sort of trying to find a sound that was me, but how I would have wanted it all along or something, you know? So I'm not embarrassed about this record at all. There's not a moment of it that I'm like, ah, when I hear it. And, that's not the case with all three of those previous ones. You know, there's times that I think are good. And, for the most part, it's just, you know, I'm mortified by the previous work. And I know that lots of people would disagree with me. Like, it's fine. It's just, it's not, you know, it's not an accurate representation of what I would have done with those songs had I the means to do otherwise.
How would you describe the actual difference in sound? Is there a way to do that?
I mean, I think polished versus unpolished is pretty good. It's like, before it was all very like sort of almost cheese ball electronic, like Casio noise. And same, my songwriting hasn't changed. I mean, I think I've gotten better and it's, you know, maybe more involved with harmonies and stuff like that. But the basic elements of it, you know, me like being upset and writing it down and turning it into something, that's all still the same. And I think, you know, my writing inspiration hasn't changed. I haven't stopped listening to the same ish that I listened to all during the 90s. So, you know, I'm still inspired by Liz Phair and these old records. So I work with different producers each time. That always changes the sound.
So how does... Tell me about the instrumentation.
Yeah. Well, that's different. I mean, before I did it all, that's another reason why, you know, it might suck a little bit pre-2006. It's like, because I was in a mode where I was, you know, needing to control all of it. And I'm not particularly keen on taking advice or listening to other people who probably knew what they were talking about. That's all been new. So this new producer, instead of fighting him, I found somebody that I thought we were kind of on the same wavelength and still do. So it was easy. You know, I was like, okay, your ideas are actually better than mine with that. Like, you do what you're good at. I'll do what I'm good at, and we'll stay out of each other's way and then come together. And it actually, like, that sort of marriage of the two worlds has been really good. And it worked out well that time. And it's, you know, I'm working with a new producer this time, but doing the same thing.
So, and then, so your latest single is a cover of the Dandy Warhols.
Yeah, The Last High.
How did you get around to covering one of their songs?
Well, I love that song. So it was, you know, it was sort of a way when I was thinking, I'm on their label. So, you know, the other bands on the label, they all are, you know, in sort of a similar vibe. Like, they're obviously all individuals, but, you know, for the Upside Down to open for the Dandies, it makes a lot of sense automatically. You know, like, the two bands make sense. I come along and I'm like, hey, look at me, I push a button and I go, you know. It's like, it's a much different thing. It's electronic and it's pop, you know, moreover than that. I think in my mind, initially, it was a way to introduce me to fans of the Dandies or fans of the label. And then once I started working on it, you know, I kind of forgot about all of that. And it just turned into this sort of love affair with that song.
And so you recorded this at their studio?
I did.
Was that kind of weird? Like, well, recording their song in their studio?
I mean, it was cool. I wouldn't even call it weird. It was obvious. This whole thing's been really weird. Like, the fact that anybody's listening is different than I had anticipated it going. You know, that's why those records before are like that. But it was weird. It was also weird at the Doug First show to have Courtney be in the crowd and be like, it was the first time I played it live. And I was terrified I was going to forget the words. And he's like standing there. I was like wearing a Andy Warhol's t-shirt. Like, it could have been a nightmare, but it wasn't. And it's been good. You know, we made a video and I think it's going over well. Covers are cool. I've never released a cover before. I've tried to cover different things and never really felt like I hit my stride with them or something. But this one, I think I was able to kind of put out my sound and give people a reference point when they know that song to kind of automatically hear what it is that I'm doing from my point of view or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So your live shows, are there any organic instruments or is it just like
there are sometimes that, you know, it changes every year. I've been kind of working with a new backing band. Like this past year was Cars and Trains, who's also a local Portland electronic dude, and so he, you know, he does his whole gadgets thing where it's like tons of drum pads and computers and gadgets, but I just started working with the Gentry for 2010, and they're more like dance rock, like electronica, but with a heavy, heavy edge. So now I have a full band that, you know, our first show is Blow Pony on the 27th of February at Rocheray, which is going to be sort of the unveiling. They played one song with me at the end of my Doug First show at the beginning of this last month. But the big unveil is later in February.
So when you're playing live and you've got essentially gadgets and computers and things doing all the sound, and you're just like standing there singing, does that ever like have kind of like a, you're doing karaoke to your own music?
I've heard that. Yeah, I mean, we try to change it up. I think electronica, you know, you always run into a little bit of that because it's like, you know, that's sort of the nature of it.
Right.
But for sure. The idea is to have it not be like that, you know, and it's been trial and error. I also, you know, I have terrible stage fright that I've always had. And so, you know, getting up there to begin with is quite a task. And at this point, it's gotten a lot easier and it's not, I'm not like, you know, I don't have to do a pile of cocaine to get on the stage anymore or whatever I used to have to do. Like now it's enjoyable. And I actually, you know, now that there's an audience and I kind of have hit my stride with at least being comfortable with you know, getting up there and basically reading my diary for people to just like pick apart and you know, do whatever. I've been able to wrap my head around that, so I'm not as afraid, and I think that has helped me sort of relax up there. And then I think, you know, the more I think about what we can do to make it interesting or translate it from the record to live, you know, I'm a singer-songwriter, so that's really what I want people to be thinking about when they're coming into it. Like, I'm not Lady Gaga, I'm not Shakira, I'm a singer-songwriter, you know, but I don't have a guitar, so you know, it looks a little different, and it is different, it sounds different, and I think the energy is obviously, like, you know, higher than it would be if I were up there plucking away at a banjo or something. You know, it's much louder. It's there's always a light show. Like, there's different things that I'm trying to do that make it more visually interesting. And I think that's sort of, you know, where I'm headed. Like, we have the songs down pat. I think having a band backing me is helping with the energy automatically. It's certainly helping me not be as afraid. I don't know why I'm afraid. You know, I don't come across like somebody that would be. But I really, truly, truly am. And I think what it is like, I get up there and I'm like not wasted. And I realize momentarily that everyone's looking at me and they're like listening to what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is like, I'm still kind of uncomfortable with it. You know, like, that's the whole reason people connect with my music, is that I make myself pretty vulnerable, I think. And I think that vulnerability is much safer on a disc than it is when there's, you know, 70 people looking at you or however many people. Right, yeah. Like, it's a lot, it's just a different experience, and it's one that I've had to really, you know, put time and effort into deciding if it's something that brings me pleasure and I even want to deal with it. And that, you know, that was years back. There was something that, you know, at Folsom Street Fair, when I played that, there was 400,000 people, and it was like freaky, you know, like, it was like so many people, and that was my first show. So,
your first show ever?
Ever. Well, I mean, in the last, that was my first show since 1998 or something. So 2006, that's a big gap. And there was a gap in me making music in there too. You know, I was wasted. I was out of the, I was away, we'll say. But, you know, gravity took hold, and I started in on it again. And once I built that first MySpace page, things just started kind of coming in. And I think that's been my process this whole time, is like, crap, people are looking, or, you know, people are paying attention. I've got to present myself in a way that I feel comfortable with and still be interesting, you know. And I think at a certain point, I just kind of said, fuck it, just look at me how I am. I don't have the energy to build some image up. I don't really have any way of getting past this stage thing unless I keep playing. Right. So, you know, I had to kind of say, whatever, come look at me. I'm a freak show. I'm awkward. And this is just like how I am. You know, the music itself, I think sometimes is, you know, makes some people uncomfortable. There's an intensity about it sometimes that is why I'm doing it. So, you know, I had to kind of own it in a way where I was like, well, you're the one that put it out there. You wrote it. Just like, suck it up and sing it, and, you know, like, be okay with that. But that's been an adjustment, man. I wasn't prepared for for people to be paying attention.
And so MySpace was kind of how you got started with this and that show in San Francisco. And since then, this thing called Facebook and Twitter have popped up.
Yeah.
How have those been working out for you?
I mean, I've had good luck with that social. That's been the lifeblood of my deal this whole time. It's always been, you know, finding real people that dig what I'm doing and then kind of tell other people about it. Like, that's how it was all grown. I didn't have a label until 2007. So, you know, there's been almost a decade of me doing it with just myself and the people that were originally around, kind of helping to grow it. Twitter's been really good. I don't know. I can't tell. I have people that are always like kind of telling me what's most important, and, you know, I get different answers from different people. I think it changes too. But I still am on MySpace. I'm still on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on D-List. I'm kind of everywhere. And I try to just keep it interesting on all of them, so there's a reason to be in different places with me. I'm not just like the whole hooking everything together where you have one post that goes out to everything. I think that kind of defeats the purpose.
So that first show in San Francisco, tell us about what that show was.
Well, it was Folsom Street Fair, so it was, you know, Leather Daddies and a sort of like the leather and bear communities. I was opening for The Presets and My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult and Bob Mould. So first off, like those names, I was like, holy crap.
Right, right.
And it was in the daytime, so it wasn't even that big a deal. But for me, it was a really big deal. And the fact that, you know, it was so wild. On top of that, you know, that was really the first time where I got up there and I was like, I'm kind of singing about, you know, stuff that is not, it's just, it was a moment where I thought it was weird that they were dancing. I was like, you're dancing. And then I was like, wait, but I make dance music, but I'm like up here about to cry or something. You know, like it was like up in ways that was like, I wasn't prepared for. I was thinking I was more comfortable with it, I think, than I really was.
What were you wearing?
I was wearing a black sort of leather daddy looking thing. I was. And it wasn't the actual leather part or the sex part or any of that going on off the stage. That was the issue. It was really an internal thing with me where I was like, okay, this is what it is and this is what you're doing. And so reconcile that right quick, like, because they're all looking back at you. You know,
your refrigerator is pretty hot. What do you feed her?
There's lots of pizza in the freezer, and it's actually kind of healthy. Like, I have peanut butter and jelly.
Now, don't lie, I can go check.
You can. I'm serious. I'm pretty healthy. Aside from like the pizza, and there are some frozen White Castle hamburgers in the freezer. But other than that, it's all spinach.
Logan, what did you want to be when you were a child?
This. Well, when I was a kid, I wanted to be on Kids Incorporated and be a big star. And when I was a kid, you know, I really was convinced that was going to happen. But I was in Nebraska, which is a really long way away from Universal Studios and all of that. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of people around me telling me that was an option, really. You know, it was... I always kind of felt like my dreams were sort of silly, you know? And so when it started to happen, I think I had a voice in my head that was, you know, my voice, ultimately, that was like, don't, you know, it's silly. And so anytime, like, I could have made things happen. There were different opportunities that came my way throughout those 6 years of doing nothing from 2000 to 2006. And by nothing, I was doing stuff. I just wasn't doing anything productive. Yes, I was away. I could have taken opportunities earlier. That I'm glad I had this chance later to take the opportunities. But you know, I held myself back for a really long time, and that was sort of when I forgot about what I wanted to be. And what I wanted to do. And I think the big reminder came in 2006 when I re-released that earlier stuff and had people like it or whatever. It was weird. It was cool.
So let's talk about what you have coming up.
Yeah.
Plug time.
On February 27th, I have a show in Portland at Blow Pony, which is at Rotore. And then, you know, we're getting ready for tour. So that's the main thing is this fall. I can't really say anything specific about it, but there's some exciting stuff happening with sort of like if I were to pick my dream band to take me under their wing and take me along with them, that's sort of what's happening. So I'm in like get your shit together time where I'm like I have a few months and I'm working with the Gentry on it. But it needs to be amazing. Even just for me. Because we're going with one of my heroes. I need it to be, you know, hero standard. So that's really where most of my time is right now being spent. We're rehearsing kind of around the clock. And I've also been working on a new record with Ytron, who's a the new producer. He actually produced that Last High cover. So my sound, I think, has changed again in a way. I get bored really easy. I'm like, I don't know, like, let's do this. And I think this, you know, I generally have a clear direction with where the record's headed by the third or fourth song that I write. And that's definitely happened here again. It's sounds a lot, I don't want to say happier, because it's honestly not happier, but it does have like a more of a dancey upbeat thing going on than this From Pillar to Post record did. And you know, it's not, I don't think From Pillar to Post is dark, but it's not, you know, it's not super light. So I tried to throw in a little bit of sunshine in this one, at least in the sound of the instrumentation is a little more, it sounds more like one of the remixes from this last record.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for letting me come down to your fancy little boat here. And thank your dog Dutch for not eating me.
Yeah.
Will you please give my number to your refrigerator?
Oh, Sam, stop it. Logan, it was a pleasure.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure.
You can watch the music video for Logan's new single, The Last High, on his website at loganleanmusic.com. His latest album, From Pillar to Post, is currently available for digital download and hits stores February 9th. This is a track from the record called Bottom Your Way to the Top. Thank you for listening to KZMU Radio. Music, where you live.
Yeah. Bottom your way to the top. Bottom your way until it all stops.